across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web. VeteransRadio.org is our new URL, VeteransRadio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to VeteransRadio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at LegalHelpForVeterans.com. We want to welcome back to Veterans Radio one of our go-to experts, Attorney Catherine Grohl. Catherine, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Jim. It's good to be here.
Well, we've had you on a couple of times, and we had Mike Cox. You're a partner at the Mike Cox Law Firm on before. Mike is a Marine, was the Attorney General for the state of Michigan, and now in private practice. And one of the things you guys are doing is working on these Camp Lejeune federal lawsuit that got created out of the Camp Lejeune Justice Act. So we've had you to talk about the act in general and the time frame. Why don't you remind everybody what the act allows Marines who were at Camp Lejeune to do and what the timing is on that?
Absolutely. The PACT Act was an umbrella statute legislation that was designed to figure out some compensation for all of the toxic exposures that the various veterans have been exposed to throughout the years all over the world. One section of that has to do with all of the Marines that were in Camp Lejeune from August of 1953 through December of 1987 and may have been exposed to a variety of horrific chemicals in the water table there that have led to a number of terrifying illnesses and diseases for which they may qualify. The PACT Act allows you to bring an administrative claim with the Department of Navy within the 2-year period from when the legislation was signed, which was August 10th of 2022. And you have until August 10th of 2024 to apply to the Navy for an administrative claim relating to your illness and disease criteria. After that 6-month administrative period, you are entitled to go to the litigation component of it, which is run by the Department of Justice, and that's in North Carolina by statute. Those judges in the federal court will be in control of what happens there.
And what's so significant also is that typically you can't sue if you're in the military, you can't sue them for nothing. And so this created this opportunity in North Carolina for this specific set of exposures over that period of time. And I read somewhere, Catherine, that something like 1,000 individual federal lawsuits have been already filed.
1,100 as of yesterday.
Okay. And on the administrative side, which is kind of a step towards, if you don't resolve it there, then you can file in litigation down in North Carolina, something like maybe 90,000 administrative claims. Is that kind of the number?
93,000 as of yesterday.
So, you know, there's a lot of men and women who are involved in this. Some family members also have some rights, as I understand it.
family members do, as well as the civilian employees who are employed on the base and provided administrative services in support of the Marines.
So this is really pretty comprehensive, and if you pass through Camp Lejeune, it's probably something you ought to be thinking about. But as I said, we've had Mike Cox on before, we've had Catherine Grohl here on before, but there's a new wrinkle, if you will, a new opportunity to discuss kind of what's going on. And it's you sent this over to me, and I read the issued public guidance on elective option for Camp Lejeune Justice Act claims. And as I'm reading this, I said, no, nobody other than a Philadelphia lawyer is going to be able to figure this out. Who the heck dreamed this up?
It's pretty dense reading, isn't it?
It is. So I thought, well, I'm going to get one of the experts on to talk about kind of what was behind this, and it's hot off the press, if you will. Probably nobody's gone through it yet. But talk to us about this new public guidance on elective option.
Well, I think one of the biggest things that we should recognize is that finally we do have an acknowledgement from the United States government that they have responsibility for what took place on Camp Lejeune, and they're going to have to value it and pay and compensate those people who were damaged. So we have at least an acknowledgement from them that that is not in dispute, those things. What has happened is that the Department of Navy, with these 93,000 cases, has not made a single settlement offer. And when we went to the hearing in North Carolina, the head judge of the North Carolina Eastern District Court made it very clear that they expected offers immediately to be made, because he wanted the money in the hands of the vets. And he could not understand why all this time had passed, a year already, and the Navy had not made a single offer. So this is in partly in response to the judges being angry that nothing had been done yet. So that's the first thing that I think everyone needs to understand, is that the judges are adamant that things start moving in a much quicker pace to get money into the hands of the vets.
Well, if you don't, otherwise everybody just suffers with these diseases and dies. I mean, you know, it took an act of Congress for this to get looked at. And I'm not too surprised the Navy, which probably didn't have enough lawyers to deal with this problem when they got dumped what'll be 100,000 plus claims on them, they had to say, well, geez, is there any model we can use to try to find our way through this? Because we can't try 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 of these claims.
Right. I think, truthfully, they were caught off guard. They weren't prepared economically in terms of staffing, or economically in terms of the high level of technology that they would need so that proofs could be submitted with the claims. They don't have sufficient portals, and they're not capable of taking in all of the data. So it's really now the administrative process is just a 6-month waiting period, if you will. None of our clients have received any response from the Navy, even a claim number. And we know that they are just now processing claims from last December. So they're behind 10 months, even in processing any of the claims that have been submitted.
Well, this 10-page public guidance on an elective option is, as I said, pretty dense reading, and I actually don't see an issue date on it, and I'm not sure when it was issued. But talk to us what they thought they were doing in terms of setting up this elective option grid and process.
So the idea was to allow all of the vets who meet a certain level of criteria what's called an early out or elective option, by submitting a more condensed form of proofs and meeting certain criteria that is not in the statute, they could get quicker compensation. But the more Mike and I dug into this, we realized that there's so many landmines and roadblocks built into what you would have to do to get to these settlement proposals that they're making to even get an offer.
So that's one of the things I wanted to comment on. This elective option, if you say, yeah, I want to do that, it doesn't commit them to settle with you, does it?
No, it does not. It is not an offer. It's a proposal for an offer. Very different. You can't just say, okay, I'm in, and you're going to get, they're going to write a check in 60 days. There are about 22, I think, hoops we counted that you're going to need to jump through to see if you can even get to that point.
Well, one of the things that they tried to do, and this is typical, you sort of try to make things very objective versus subjective. Hey, how long were you at Camp Lejeune? Was it a 30-to-1-year exposure, 1 year to five, more than five? So one of the things they do is break it into length of time, and then they also break it into what they called Tier 1 qualifying injuries and Tier 2 qualifying injuries, which I thought was kind of an interesting approach. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yes, and you know, one of the things I want to make sure your audience understands is that this proposal is not in accord with the statute. The statute does not require any of these time frames. It doesn't break illnesses down into categories. There's no references to any of this in the statute. This is something that the Department of Navy and Justice came up with on their own that is just for this particular administrative process. So one of the things that they did was they reduced the number of illnesses that qualify in this elective option. They not only reduced them, but they also decided to create a stratus of what they considered to be a higher level injury versus a lower level injury. We have no idea what they're using to make those categorizations. It's not disclosed to us. So
that's actually one of the things I found kind of offensive here. They decided that take your pick here, liver cancer or kidney cancer or bladder cancer were tier ones, and that Parkinson's disease and kidney disease were tier two. And if you know anybody suffering from Parkinson's disease, it's horrible on not only them but the whole family for a really long period of time. And I was trying to figure out, how did you decide what's a tier one and tier two? So there's no criteria?
You just raised what we think is one of the most significant and important points. Pain and suffering is what we are asking our vets to be compensated for. Putting these numbers on how long you were there and what your illness is does not in any way take into the individual's struggles, their family issues, the loss of quality of life for anybody. It lumps everybody into group. I'm just going to give you an example. We have a client that had liver cancer. He treated for 4 to 8 weeks. His tumors were removed, and he's going on to live a healthy and productive life. We've had other people that went through chemotherapy and radiation therapy and died in 3 years, a long, slow death. And yet, they're valued at the same, but the one who died is going to get $100,000 more, which Mike feels like, if that's what you're telling us a Marine's life is worth, you better rethink your position.
Yeah, they did, at least in this elective option grid, give, I guess, what I would hope are minimums that will get negotiated up or tried up, a different, based on the tier or quality qualifying injury and the length of time, they're proposing to offer settlements that range from $100,000 to $450,000 if you, and maybe throw on another $100,000 if you actually died from that injury. So the maximum offer is $550,000 per veteran.
Offer without really teeth in it, and I'll tell you why. Almost every one of the clients has been there less than the year. Camp Lejeune is a training base. Typically, most vets are rotated in and out for a series of months for training, and then they're sent overseas or to another duty station. So the majority of people are probably less than 1 year of exposure. In order to get to the 1 to 5 years of exposure, and here's another example, we have a client that was there for a year and 2 weeks. Well, the Navy requires that we remove his annual leave. So once we take out his 30 days of annual leave, guess what? He doesn't make the 1 to 5 years exposure. So finding someone that makes 5 years or over that was stationed at Camp Lejeune is almost impossible to find. It's very rare that someone would stay there for a period of 5 years or longer. So that higher number is not really reflective of the majority of people who could even get that.
It also rang for me a little bit, and I didn't research this. I'm sure others have, but you know, there had to be a gritter and approach for the victims of 9/11, who the firefighters and first responders and other sort of catastrophes where the government has said, hey, yeah, that's our fault, we're going to pay you for some. This just doesn't seem like it matches up to those other things. Is my general feeling right or wrong?
It's right, because one of the other concerns that we have is the limitation of 35 years. If it's 35 years past the last date that you are at Camp Lejeune where you get diagnosed and treated for some of these diseases, you're not covered under this proposal. Now, again, that's not in the statute that it has to be manifest itself within 35 years. And the litigation side of things, there's no limitations on that. If you have a direct link and we've got VA disability statements and we've got doctors writing letters connecting the dots between the illness and the exposure, regardless of how many years ago it was, you've just routed out a whole group of people who are never going to be eligible.
You know, a lot of times the government issues these in, Federal Register, and they solicit comments on them, and then the rules might change. This isn't really a rule, it's a guidance. But is there a process that they've encouraged for the Navy and DOJ to say, okay, we're putting this out here, but tell us what we got right and what we got wrong? Or is this a, hey, this is our position, move on?
This is our position, move on. This is not subject to discussion. And, you know, one of the things that Mike was concerned about is the way it was done. Typically, if there's a legitimate offer being conveyed, it's conveyed through the attorney to their client. You don't publish it on a public website for everybody to see and run big numbers past them to where that's what they're seeing and hearing. And then when they get into the fine-tooth details of 11 pages of qualifying factors to even get to this money. So it was kind of a misrepresentation in the way they did it. And they circumvented every attorney having a meaningful conversation with their client about this.
This doesn't seem like it was designed to get a bunch of settlements as much as designed to say maybe to the court, well, we did something.
Agreed. Just as an example, if you met all of the qualifying conditions and your illness manifested itself in the time frame that they asked you for, I still can't get you a proposal or an offer because they are demanding that I get certified original records signed by a doctor certifying that they're original. I can't do that. Many of these records are destroyed. Some of them are on microfilm that we had to get. We had to hire a retrieval company to go into all these doctors' offices to get copies of records. They're not originals, they're copies. And you have to have the original to apply for this proposal. We can't do that. We don't have the ability to do that. And people are going to get left out that way. Another concern is if you have two diseases, which many of our guys do, they've got chronic kidney disease and Parkinson's, or chronic kidney disease and pancreatic cancer. They only get to apply for one level, not both. In the 9/11 model that you were talking about, a point system is ascribed, a settlement grid's created so that there's value given to every facet of your life that adds up to a total sum. So that part's going to be navigated in the litigation, but the administrative claim part is not looking at those important factors at all.
Yeah, I really think that in many regards, this you can look. Knowing how normal civilians operate, not lawyers, but they're going to go over to the far right-hand side and say, well, I really could use $500,000 right now. I'll take that without really understanding that that's not really what's being offered here, is it?
It's really not. All that's being offered here is the possibility for you to file a claim if you meet the 22 guiding characteristics that the Navy has set up.
They also have a number of frequently asked questions, which again is a kind of a standard government issue thing, and ask, you know, what if I decline the settlement, what happens, and why only these nine diseases? And
well, you know, the other thing is too, is they have a caveat in here that they can withdraw or change this at any time they choose. So, you know, really, it's not like what a standard offer and settlement would be. When you have a standard offer and settlement, both parties are engaging in good faith and trying to actively come to a resolution that meets both needs. This isn't that. This is, we're giving you an opportunity to get an early out if you meet all these criteria. If you don't, move on to the North Carolina litigation. And this is where the judges were concerned. They kept saying, why do we have an administrative process if you're not doing anything during the administrative process? You've got all these claims for 6 months and you're doing nothing with them except dumping them over here onto the North Carolina court system. Well, that's what they've done. Even if someone wanted to apply now, it's going to be 2 years before the Navy's going to be able to get to their claim because they're still so far behind on the ones that were submitted without asking for the offer.
Yeah, as I said, these frequently asked questions also hit on one issue that I know many veterans we've talked to about this, and we don't handle these kind of cases. We leave it to experts like Mike Cox and Catherine Grohl. Will accepting an EO offer affect my VA benefits?
Right.
And then they say, no, accepting an EO offer for a CLJA claim will not affect the claimant's VA benefits. Is there hidden in that answer, but if you don't accept this, you don't know what'll happen?
There is. They're suggesting, now the VA has published on its website that it is statutorily prohibited from collecting money from the United States government to compensate it for disability claims. So that's been on their website since the Camp Lejeune cases started. The suggestion here from this document is that if you take this early out, you're not going to have to worry about your VA disability. But if you don't, we can't promise that the VA is not going to come after you and reduce your benefits. Now, that would be interesting because the VA and its representatives have been telling all of the Camp Lejeune vets that they're not going to have to pay it back. So that's a little bit of a twisted idea in there that I don't know is accurate.
Yeah, I was really disappointed to read that answer to that frequently asked questions because it sort of was designed to intimidate that. Well, if you get an award or settlement outside of the EO process, it may be offset, is what it says, may be offset by the value of the VA benefits. And that's, I think, contrary to law and seems to me to be trying to unduly influence people. So I'm a little disappointed that it was drafted in that, certainly in that fashion.
I agree with you.
As you look at the national landscape, because I know you have clients all over the country, and as I said, yeah, there'll be 100,000 of these administrative claims before the year's out, I'm sure. Where do we go from here? Because this isn't going to get these cases out of the North Carolina courts. Do you think the North Carolina court has to turn around and appoint a special master to develop its own matrix of how do we settle these things?
So the good news, Jim, is that is already in process. The leadership committee that the judges have appointed have already been hard at work trying to set up a national database that's going to allow us to do the inputs for all of our clients once they get out of the administrative claim process. And we don't know what all the criteria is going to be. That's being fleshed out right now, and the judge has to sign off on it. Proposals are being submitted for their review. Mike and I will be meeting with the national leadership committees next Wednesday to get updates on where we are with the national models for a settlement grid. So I believe that there will be a few cases tried. They're looking at possibly March or April of next year to try a few what they call bellwether cases, which would be cases that could test out how a jury looks at the evidence and what kind of values they're putting on the cases and what the expert opinions are going to look like. so that we'll have a better sense of what we might need to negotiate with in terms of, you know, the, let's just say the Navy and the Justice Department come up with a $500,000 settlement on liver cancer. And yet we get a jury verdict of $4 million for liver cancer. We can't go back to our clients and say, take 500 when we know that a jury could value it so much higher. So those things are going to be unfolding over the next 6 months to a year while we navigate this terrain of all the administrative claims that are going to get dumped in North Carolina.
Well, more to follow, and we'll be continuing to update our veteran radio listeners as this progresses, because it affects so many Marines. We're talking to attorney Catherine Grohl, who's our expert on this. Catherine, if people want to reach out to you, where would they find you?
We are at the Mike Cox Law Firm, and we have a website that allows people to come in and ask about anything related to the Camp Lejeune. Mike's got some information posted on there, and he does a great job of outlining what the criteria is and the disease process on there. And then our direct line phone number is 734-591-4002. And our law firm website is MikeCoxLaw.com.
Catherine, we appreciate the time that you've given to Veterans Radio today and have in the past to keep people updated on this. And we'd very happy if we could reach out to you in the future as this develops over the next 6 or 9 months.
It would be my pleasure, Jim. Thank you so much.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org.
And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We would again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Press Corps Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.